is the Stargirl After Show with Sarah and Sean. Your post-show breakdown of DC Stargirl with Easter eggs, exclusive behind-the-scenes info, and cast and crew interviews.
This is our destiny.
I finally know who I really am.
I'm Stargirl.
This is the Stargirl After Show.
Hey, Star fam, welcome back to another episode of Stargirl After Show, sponsored, as always, by Stargirl.tv and DCTV.news, your best resources for news, media, and spoilers about Stargirl and other DC Comics properties. I'm Sean.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we have a great show for you because every episode is a great show because Stargirl is such a great show.
It really is. Especially this season. I am loving it.
I love the murder mystery aspect. I love that the show reinvents itself every season.
Yeah.
I hope it can continue doing that moving forward.
I think what most impresses me about this season is I did not care for the character of Paula Brooks. I didn't like her. I thought she was pretty one-dimensional. And I love her. She's my favorite character this season.
Yeah, she's really fantastic, and we will get into it as we discuss Frenemies Chapter 4, The Evidence. I wish I could put like a dung-dung. Mm-hmm. Well, not a Law and Order dung-dung, but you know.
Right, right.
Some sort of sting there would be really cool. The episode's written by Paula Sevenbergen and directed by Walter Garcia, who is also the stunt coordinator for the show, if you recall.
All right. And we start off with Cameron in his house and he's picking up snow globes. And there's one with a girl that I'm pretty sure is supposed to look like Courtney.
Yeah, I don't know why he has a Courtney Whitmore snow globe. I'm sure it's just a coincidence and it's not actually Courtney.
Her hair did not seem as curly as Brex.
But the way he freezes it over accidentally and shatters it really foreshadows like the reason he's sort of pushing Courtney away, his fear of hurting her. Because, I mean, that's what he does there is he just freezes her to death and shatters her.
Well, the figure of the girl stayed solid.
That's true.
Everything around shattered, which is exactly what happens later.
Yeah.
But we're jumping ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, it's fine to jump ahead when we're talking about the clear foreshadowing here and the like insight into his fears.
Yeah. And then his grandparents come in and they try to comfort him, saying it'll take time, speaking another language there, saying bless our grandson so that our enemies might suffer.
Yeah, that old family motto that was introduced in season one when they came over for dinner at the Whitmore Dugan house.
I wonder if Cameron's ever going to try to learn Norwegian and see if he can figure out what's actually going on with his grandparents.
That would be funny if he's just like going through, okay, and then just like taking notes and our enemies may, what the what?
Mm-hmm. Or he could just like hold up Google Translate and see what they say.
Oh, like Barbara did.
Mm-hmm.
Nice season one callbacks.
All right. And then we cut over to Courtney asleep in her bed, but not for long because Cosmo comes to wake her up, literally blasts a hole in her pillow when she tries to ignore him and then pulls her out the window. And they go to the scene of the crime and she finds Sylvester there.
All kinds of messed up.
Yeah.
Not much more to say about that scene, really.
No. Then we're over at the hospital and Beth's mom is there giving an update that he's unresponsive, contusions, but he is stable.
What I love about this scene is that Bridget is learning the intricacies of crafting a superhero cover story.
Yes.
She did try admirably.
Yeah, I thought that was a great try.
Yeah. But you got to think a little deeper. Luckily, Courtney and Pat have a little more experience in that arena.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, once he does wake up, he can say that like, oh, I mean, it was consistent with the hit and run, but that's not what happened and fix that situation.
Yeah, fortunately, he wakes up pretty quickly and can stave all that off. Also important to note, he has a puncture wound in his back, the same kind of wound that killed the gambler. So sounds like the murderer definitely is who came back there. And then Courtney is just so upset. Like, why would he go out and do this? Why wouldn't he take the staff? And Pat's like, well, he's because he's Sylvester. That's what he does. And he was trying to be better and follow the agreement of when he has to staff.
And then this scene with Yolanda isn't very long. At first blush, not a lot happens in it. But there's a lot of information in this scene.
There really is.
So it starts with Yolanda talking to Rick on the phone, just sort of discussing what's happened.
Which I think is big because, you know, it's Rick calling someone on the phone. That's not really his style. Seems like he just listens to other people and it isn't really chatty like that. And then also because they are a team anti-Cindy. And so maybe they are becoming closer as they're trying to bond together over hating her.
You know, our night fan's gonna riot over that.
Yeah, I know. So is he our cat?
Our cat works, yeah.
Better than Wild Man.
Yeah, definitely better than Wild Man.
Although I think I like that one better.
So her mom comes in, she gets off the phone. She lies and says that it was Maria asking her to come in for a shift. She had no reason to lie about it being Rick. This is clearly her just setting up an alibi for going out the following evening.
Mm-hmm.
We finally get a little insight as to why she's back at the diner. Her dad lost his job. So now Yolanda is helping earn for the family, I guess.
Yeah.
And what did you think of her mom saying like, oh, I bet you told everybody.
I was really frustrated because you would think like that her parents would progress by now. It's been over a year since that whole thing happened with the photo, and they should learn to trust their daughter.
Also, that's nothing to do with like why they were mad at her in the first place.
Right.
She wasn't going out and gossiping about the family's business.
Right. They just think so little of her now that they will think she'll do anything wrong.
Or at least her mom does.
Right. Yes.
It was really frustrating. And I don't like that character at all.
Agreed. But I guess we may not have her much longer because a realtor is coming. So who knows if Yolanda and her family will be sticking around in Blue Valley or not.
Can I just talk about the writing for a second?
Sure.
Because this scene, I didn't time it or anything, but it can't be longer than a minute. But we have a recap between these two, Yolanda and Rick, of what's going on in the episode and their thoughts on it. And then we're getting further into her relationship with her mom, what's going on with her dad, what's going on with the house, why she's back at work, all of that in that little bit amount of time. And it does not feel like an exposition dump at all. It's very naturalistic. It's just really, really good writing.
It really is. I thought the same thing. It also makes me wonder if Courtney knows about all the stuff going on with Yolanda's parents, you know, about her dad losing her job and a realtor coming to look at the house.
Yeah.
Or if Yolanda's keeping secrets because she doesn't trust Courtney as much anymore after she let Cindy onto the team.
That definitely does seem to be causing a little bit of friend strife there. I wonder if Yolanda's told anybody about her dad getting fired.
Yeah, I would think probably not.
So moving on.
We are at the hospital and Sylvester wakes up.
Very nice that they didn't keep him in a coma for 6 episodes like they did with Brainwave.
Although I was okay with Brainwave being out of commission.
He's too scary.
Exactly. I love this where Courtney just launches into like assuming that he won't remember anything. And she's like, okay, you were attacked. And he's like, yeah, kid, I remember.
Well, I mean, that makes perfect sense to me because a lot of times people that go through a trauma like that don't have any idea what happened.
Yeah.
You know, I've known people that got in car accidents and didn't remember getting in the car. Like your brain just like blocks that off and like rewinds and blocks all that off.
That you're literally describing me. I was in a horrific car crash and remember waking up in the ER and that's it.
And you know, I'm sure someone had to tell you what happened to you.
Yeah, exactly. But he's like, you know, nothing like an ambush to make you feel like a rookie. And he can confirm personally that the killer is in fact very strong.
He does harp on his feeling bad about getting ambushed a couple of times in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but it's an ambush.
Yeah.
You would feel worse, I think, if you got your ass handed to you when you saw it coming.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, you got ambushed. It happens. You don't know who ambushed you. So they could have come from anywhere.
Exactly.
You didn't have the staff. You're just a dude at that point.
Yeah.
Though, don't tell Sylvester he's just a dude. Like, that's not going to make him happy.
Oh, no. And I got to say, Joel McHale is killing it in this episode because he is so good at playing Starman as like the cocky in charge guy. But it's like he's a completely different person here where he just feels so defeated and so down on himself. And it's just amazing the range that he has here.
Yeah, he's good. The most exciting thing about this scene for me, though, is Dr. McKnider coming back.
Yeah, I was so excited for that. So he shows up and then we zoom out and we see a screen watching room 208 here. Is there a meaning behind that number that you know of?
Nope. I think it's just a room number.
Okay. I didn't know if it was a reference to a comic or episode.
I can't think of what it could be.
Okay.
There could be some personal thing. But as far as I'm aware, it's, you know, just something they put on the screen in post.
All right. So McKnider is doing a exam of Sylvester, looking at his back, and he is healing remarkably fast. And so he has a theory that the cosmic staff is imbued Sylvester with cosmic energy, and that's healing him while he was in stasis. And that's why he was also able to come back from the dead.
I actually like this explanation for a few reasons. First, you have Sylvester having used the staff for God knows how long. And over that period, just all that cosmic energy sort of like seeping into his body, like Superman soaking up the energy from the yellow sun.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sort of like staying in his body and over 10 years, sort of healing his deadness.
Yeah.
And then the staff wakes back up and he wakes back up. That makes sense to me. Also, it means that Courtney may be similarly protected if she continues using the staff for long enough.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. And if there are any dangers of doing it, that they're suddenly going to be worried about her exposure to it.
Yeah, we could go with a 90s Lex Luthor story because he always had a kryptonite ring on in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost his hand to cancer.
Oh.
Which then got dumber. He eventually died from cancer and then his son came and took his place, but it was really just a clone. And then the clone eventually lost its hair and that was Lex Luthor. And then for a great number of years, Lex Luthor was a clone of himself in the comics.
Okay.
Until
I'm assuming they brought him back from the dead.
Until whatever reboot, yeah. That's neither here nor there. I don't think that's where we're going with Stargirl here.
No, probably not.
So not only do we get the explanation of how Sylvester likely came back to life, but we also get Dr. McKnider discussing his family life. We know his son's name is Stanley. This is the 10-year-old son that he has that we mm-hmm. learned about in the finale of season 2. And apparently he's stepped into his life with his wife and child again. Luckily, she didn't remarry or anything while he was stuck in the Shadowlands.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
That would have been real awkward.
Yeah.
Also, she could have just sort of moved on with her life without, you know, moving on romantically. But I'm glad that that's not what happened. They've come back together and they're a family. And hopefully Stanley's like, oh, cool, my dad. And not like, dude, I don't know you.
Yeah.
But more importantly, we find out how happy he is to have passed on the mantle to Beth.
Mm-hmm.
He's so happy with her as Dr. Midnight that he doesn't miss being Dr. Midnight at all.
Whereas Sylvester's talking about, I haven't so much passed it on as much as just passed it back and forth.
And this whole thing gets brought up again later where Dr. McKnider has always had an entire other life
mm-hmm.
aside from being Dr. Midnight. But Sylvester only has Starman. He's only ever had Starman, or before that, the Star Spangled Kid.
Yeah.
Since he was 15.
So it makes sense that when he came back, yeah, he wants to take that back up again.
Yeah, he never had anything else. Never had a job of any kind. He probably never bagged groceries.
No,
he was
I'm sure
too
he
busy
didn't.
Bagging bad guys.
Nice, nice. All right. And we are back at the crime scene. And we got Courtney, Beth, Yolanda, Cindy, and Rick. And the scene is wiped clean. Beth's goggles are not finding anything. Yolanda, of course, accuses Cindy again. And who replies, you know, if it was me, I wouldn't have let Sylvester live. Which is not as comforting as I think that she meant it to be.
No.
When she said that, the staff kind of made like angry noises. Yeah, was that scripted?
I don't know. Strangely, I don't remember every word of every script.
I wasn't sure if like in general, like the noises of the staff get like its own kind of, not dialogue, but description.
So in season one, you know, the little notch on the staff? In season one, that was often described as like being raised up or down to describe like a happy or a sad mood.
Okay.
And then I think just as the VFX grew over the production of season one and they sort of learned how to bring life to the character of the Cosmic Staff, I think it changed to like the light moving up and down and the tones of the cosmic hum. We're going to call it the cosmic hum.
I like it. Works.
And then in seasons two and three, I don't recall much in the way of description of staff mood being portrayed.
Okay.
I think it's just taken from the context of the scene and then they, you know, do what they do.
That makes sense. I was just curious about how much personality they actually write for him.
I mean, they do put in things like, you know, they'll say like the staff seems happy or the staff slinks off.
Okay.
That kind of stuff.
All right.
But not so much like the staff makes a high-pitched chirrup noise.
All right.
Anyway, back to the scene. They're heading off and suddenly the goggles, these are some precision goggles.
Mm-hmm.
They pick up a single skin cell that does not belong to Sylvester. So it must be that of the killer.
And before we learn anything there, we go to Cameron's home. And his grandparents are bringing him tea so he can calm down and try again. And then they take away his art.
And they say he has to give up his art for now. Don't know why. I have a hypothesis. I think it's that they want to avoid what happens later in the episode.
Yeah.
I think they want to guide his powers and his use of them in a specific way. With the suffering of the enemies and all.
I agree. I took it as they wanted anger to drive it instead of, you know, love and all that.
Yeah, it's hard to parse exactly what their plan is here because they're like, oh, our family for generations has used these powers to help people, but definitely don't think nice things when you use your powers.
Well, yeah, because we haven't actually seen them give direction, right? On what he needs to do.
Right. We've only in a bit hear him discuss that they've told him these things.
All right. And then we go over to Pat brings Sylvester home. He's got fresh sheets. Then the fridge is full of juice. Because Dr. McNider said he has to stay away from alcohol. And Dave just keeps getting better and better.
And he's, again, like really into this like self-doubt phase. He doesn't know whether he should be Starman anymore. Because, and again, he talks about having been ambushed like a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Again, man, like, stop feeling so bad about that. That's not that bad.
I really love, you know, Sylvester's talking about, I should have moved on like McNider. I don't have a family like McNider. And then Pat's like, you dedicated your life to saving people. Not a lot of people would make that choice. And you do have a family. And I thought that was just a sweet, classic Pat kind of line.
Yeah, he did have more family, but his sister was a little bit murdered.
Yeah.
By her husband.
But Pat's his family.
Yeah, and always has been.
Yeah.
And even Sylvester said so last season in a flashback.
Yeah. All right, then we go over to the pit stop where we got Beth and Charles. They are looking at the skin cell. It is not human, not identifiable, but Dr. McNider recognizes it. From Dragon King.
I think he recognizes, I want to be just very clear. I think he recognizes that Dragon King had similar results.
Yes.
I don't think he's looking at the skin cell and going, I recognize that single skin cell and what organism it is from.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, we got the same results on Dragon King.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's a little ridiculous.
A little bit. I bought it, though.
But this makes sense.
So then we go to the school and the JSA minus Cindy is discussing Dragon King. Courtney is like, we need to warn Cindy that her dad is back, and the others aren't so convinced because they think, well, what if she's working with them? So she shares what happened in the Shadowlands and what she saw, how she lives Cindy's childhood, and says that she knows that Cindy would never work with him again.
And they all, even Rick, look like they feel sympathy for her in that moment, for Cindy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a nice touch because, you know, even Rick isn't like so gung-ho hate her. And Yolanda also, who has even more reason to hate her,
mm-hmm.
you know, has maybe a little bit of understanding of her in this moment.
And then we cut to Cindy in the lab down in the tunnels. And she is in a lot of arm pain and trying to shake it off.
And she does the Dragon King blink.
I was not expecting that.
It was my favorite thing.
I mean, it was my favorite thing about Dragon King to start with. But the fact that she has that going on now. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, oh my God, what's happening, guys? That's my whole note is Cindy Dragon King blinks, exclamation point. That's my only note for this whole scene. That's the scene for me.
I mean, that pretty much covers it.
Yep.
And then we go upstairs to the bathroom with Mike and Jakeem. But the Thunderbolt had previously put on the wall is now changed to your mom has many names.
I mean, what a burn.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, your mom has many names. So yeah, Mike wants to go find Dragon King in the tunnels so they can earn the respect of their superhero peers.
Yeah, Jakeem's like, wait, this guy who had scales in those sharp teeth? And Mike's like, that's got to be an exaggeration, right? Oh, Mike.
I hope Mike never has to learn the truth.
Yeah.
Which is a lie. I hope he does learn the truth because I want to see Dragon King again.
Absolutely.
And of course, another wish goes wrong. They wish for the keys to Stripe. And I really wish I could hear the phrasing of this wish that fills the entire bathroom with keys.
Yeah, enough to throw them out of the bathroom.
On like a wave of keys.
And then they just kind of leave.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to have to explain that.
And then, I've been so excited to talk about this all episode, we are at the American Dream. And Barb's park proposal gets a green light because Tim is gung-ho, two thumbs up. Any project that she's for, he's also for.
Tim's turnaround is just so unexpected. What could possibly have gotten into him?
We cut over to Barbara's office and Paula is there.
Asking about Tom or Todd, whatever his name is.
So good. So good. She got Barbara a gift. She made her own taxidermy fox.
I was a raccoon, actually.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, see, it's made to the standard of quality that I think her first German chocolate cake was.
Okay, gotcha.
I don't think she has a lot of experience in this.
No.
But if you watch again, you'll see he's got like the little bandit mask.
Okay. But she made it herself to show she how much she cares. So she's listening to Barb and she's putting her time in.
Because back in episode 301, Barbara told her, you know, it makes it more special when you make it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she didn't go down to Blue Valley Taxidermy and just buy a raccoon.
Yeah.
You know, she killed it herself, too.
Oh, yeah.
That is a from scratch present that Barbara now has to pretend to love forever.
If it was me, I would put little outfits on it, I think. If I was forced to keep that, you got to do something with it.
I just love that she has to pretend to love it forever.
Yeah.
And that she will, because Paula is now her friend.
Yeah, they are my favorite friendship of the show. I'm so excited.
Paulbra?
That would work.
Yeah, that's the only way it works, because the other way is just Barbara.
Right, right. Or Barbla.
Or Barbgris.
Ooh, I like that. All right, Barbgris, that's it. And then we go back to the Whitmore Dugan home, and Pat and Sylvester are down in the basement watching an old Western and reciting the lines with it when Sportsmaster shows
up. Hold on. Stop. Not an old Western.
No.
The outlaw Josie Wales. It is a classic. It's Clint, and everyone should watch it.
Okay.
It's good.
All right. I had not heard of it before.
Oh, The Outlaw Josie Wales is so good. It really is.
Okay.
I'm not like a huge Westerns fan, but there are certain Westerns to check the boxes, and that's one of them.
Okay. All right.
And I love this thing where they're reciting the lines. Sylvester, you can tell, is starting to feel more confident again.
More like himself.
Yeah, because he's telling Pat, like, no. I do the Clint lines. You do the scared guy who's about to get shot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one that recites the Clint Eastwood lines. That's not the best part of the scene, though.
No, we got Crusher coming downstairs saying that the door was open. So I guess Courtney hasn't learned her lesson, or the door was not actually open. And Sylvester immediately calls the staff over. But Crusher just says, you know, I heard what happened, you know, and is like, oh, but it wasn't us. Don't worry. And I love Sylvester. I know you don't hit that hard. And then his, hey, we hit plenty hard. I love the two of them. It's great. And
I love him, you know, like he seems genuine, but also like mm-hmm. he's very clearly like trying to make amends with the whole yeah. like, you know, I used to go have a couple of beers after you would kick my ass.
Yeah.
And when me and the wife were pulling jobs, Starman was the last guy we wanted to see, which, you know, when you want to get in good with Sylvester, I think placating his ego is the way to go.
Oh, absolutely. So either Crusher means it, which I think that he does, or he is really good at manipulating people.
So I don't think that Crusher is really good at manipulating people. I think no. I have always thought that Crusher just is always genuine.
Yeah.
Crusher's friendship with Pat has always been genuine from the first time he tried to get him on the program, to the point where last season, Artemis stopped Isaac from killing Pat.
Yeah.
By saying, no, that's my dad's friend.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. So, yeah, I think all of this is genuine. I think despite what happened at the grocery store, Crusher is like, yeah, man, I mean, this is what it is. Here's some beer.
And he's like, you're friends with Pat. You know, I'm friends with Pat, so you're cool by association.
Just a real great scene.
Yeah, and then Sylvester does invite him, you know, to have a beer.
And watch The Outlaw Josie Wales.
And he is very excited for that and immediately chugs the beer, crushes it on his head.
Can I tell you? Do you know why he's excited about it?
No.
Because it's a great movie. Were you not listening to me just a minute ago? God.
I actually like researched the movie trying to figure out if there was a certain reason why it was being, you know, used right in the scene, which I did not find anything.
At a guess, it's probably okay. a Warner Brothers movie that they could get the rights to.
All right. That's fair.
But also, it's Clint Eastwood being a badass.
Yeah.
The next scene. Finally, we've been waiting 3 seasons.
So we are at the school and Cameron goes into the art room. Courtney follows him and discovers that he's quitting art. And Courtney's trying to give her usual pep talk, just giving her inspiration and happiness and sending good vibes like she always does.
And can I just read you my note? Cameron ice explodes in front of Court.
Nice, nice. I just have ice explosion, exclamation point.
Yeah, no, I stuck it together. It's ice explodes. Your cam ice blowed.
We got slagmites, we got slag tights, icicles everywhere. And Courtney is throwing across the room.
And I love that when she gets up, what's the first thing she does?
She locks the door.
Yeah. It was such a nice touch. She just goes over and locks the door so they can discuss this in private and not have to explain it to people.
Mm-hmm.
And when he says that, like, you're not scared by all this, and she says, I'm feeling a lot of things right now.
Mm-hmm.
That was great because she didn't have to give anything away, but she also did not lie even a little bit.
Exactly. I thought the same thing there. And he kind of explains a little bit about the cryokinesis, that it's a gift that his family has had it for generations. His family uses it to help people.
He knows his father was killed.
Yeah, and I'm sure Courtney is like going 110 miles per hour in her head. Like, okay, so does he know the truth about Icicle? Does he know what his father did?
Yeah, she practically says gulp.
Yeah. But he said that his grandparents won't tell him how his dad died, but he knows that he died trying to help people.
Which is kind of true.
He thought that he was helping people, yes.
He was trying to help people at the expense of only 25 million lives.
Yeah.
But, you know, the remaining 275 million people would generally have better lives, I guess, after is the idea. That's math that just doesn't work for me.
All right. And then we jump back over to the porch where Sylvester and Pat are having a beer and Crusher's doing one arm push-ups in the basement to work off his carbs.
Doesn't even know Pat's gone. One thing, we get a little more insight here. I don't know if you noticed, into the history of the Cosmic Staff.
Yeah.
Way back in the beginning of season one, one of the first few episodes, maybe episode two, we learn that Sylvester didn't make the Cosmic Staff. It was made by Ted Knight.
Mm-hmm.
But we never knew what path the Cosmic Staff took before it got to Sylvester. Because in the comics, it went... Well, in the comics, the Cosmic Rod was Ted Knight, then David Knight. And then the Cosmic Staff was Jack Knight, who then gave it to Courtney.
Yeah.
But here, we learn that Ted made the Cosmic Staff and he gave it directly to Sylvester. So it seems like Sylvester is either the first or second bearer of the Cosmic Staff.
Yes.
We don't know if Ted created it and then just gave it over, or if Ted was maybe Starman or a proto-Starman for a bit before passing it on to Sylvester.
So in the comics, was Ted Knight Starman?
Ted Knight was the Golden Age Starman.
Okay.
And then in the James Robinson series, it opens with his son David is Starman. But then David is killed in the opening pages.
Oh, okay.
And Jack, who was not interested in the Starman legacy at all, takes over being Starman with a new a prototype Cosmic Staff. The Cosmic Rod was just like a foot long.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Ted and David used. Jack used one briefly, but it was destroyed. He just used it to like escape an assassination attempt or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then had to take up the staff, which he eventually decided he had had his fill of superheroics and gave it to Courtney Whitmore.
And then Sylvester Pemberton in the comics was Star Spangled Kid. Right. And that's it, right?
Yeah, he had a cosmic converter belt, which is what Courtney originally had in the comics.
Okay.
When she also went by the name the Star-Spangled Kid.
Okay.
And Sylvester went from being the Star-Spangled Kid to being Skyman when he was the leader of Infinity Incorporated until he was eventually killed by Mr. Bones.
By Mr. Bones. Interesting. Okay.
He was killed by Mr. Bones, who was at the time being mind controlled.
Interesting.
Yes.
By Dr. Psycho?
Maybe.
Really?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
But so, yeah. Obviously, the whole Starman legacy is different on the show very much and always has been than the comics. And that's just the direct legacy of the Cosmic Rod / Staff Starman, because there are several other Starmans in the comics as well.
Okay.
There's Tom Kalor from the 30th century, who was, I think, Cosmic Lad in the Legion of Superheroes and got time displaced, lost his mind, didn't remember who he was. There was the blue guy, Michael. There was another guy with a dumb suit in the late 80s. Yeah, there's been lots of Starmans. But
okay.
I only care about the Knight family.
Yeah.
That's the core
one. That seems to be what they're pulling from in the show, too.
But James Robinson's Starman series folds them all in together very beautifully.
Awesome.
That's important. Everybody should read James Robinson's Starman series. Like, even before you watch The Outlaw Jesse Wales.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so we learn that, and then Pat gives Sylvester a new suit.
Before he does that, I love how Pat's trying to comfort him by listing everything that Sylvester has done wrong since arriving in Blue Valley. It was just a great comedic moment. I couldn't tell if Pat was maybe a little bit buzzed from having those beers, because he doesn't seem the type that drinks. And so maybe just from having one, because he seemed like kind of jokey, you know, about, oh yeah, you're calling him a Crusher a maniac. Crusher was calling you a maniac. And
I felt like he just seemed like he was in a good mood. Like everything was working out.
That could be it too. Yeah.
He didn't have to worry about his basement friend murdering his next door neighbors or vice versa.
Yeah.
It was just like a good moment. He just watched an excellent movie. And, you know, maybe he was a little buzzed. Who can say?
And when he gives him his new suit, he says, if I ain't retiring, neither are you.
We saw him making the suit last episode at the end.
Uh-huh.
And I did notice that he didn't burn up 4 sewing machines making it the way Courtney did back in 102.
Maybe he has a more heavy duty one.
It's probably the one that he used for repairing that suit way back in the day.
Yeah.
Much higher quality than your typical home ec class sewing machine.
That actually makes a lot of sense. All right. And then we got Cammy walking past Cameron's mural. And then Yolanda and Rick go into the basement looking for Courtney because she's not answering her phone.
Because she's with a boy.
Mm-hmm. But they don't know that.
No.
They share with Sylvester the Dragon King news. And tell him that who attacked you. We're going to go check the tunnels. Sylvester's like, okay, I'm coming too.
Let me suit up.
Rick is actually excited. I guess he's thinking like, this is a guy who used to, you know, go out on these, you know, jobs with my dad.
Yes, absolutely. Like, this is the guy. Because I think that all of them feel a little bit in the shadow of their predecessors. Of course.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially Rick. Because Rick's in the shadow of his literal father.
Yeah.
Of course, he still doesn't have a working hourglass. So I guess next episode we'll probably see how all that works out.
All right. And then we go. Cammy is at a gazebo there.
And this is the scene we've been waiting seasons and seasons for.
Mm-hmm.
I love the slow burn.
I think it paid off really well.
It's a slow burn that pays off in an icy wonderland.
Exactly. I love how Courtney is encouraging him. You know, she says things like, I know you, you're sweet, you're kind, you're thoughtful. I'm like, how do you know all this? Because they haven't had extended moments together. But I guess there is a lot of non-aired time that they could be spending together. She tells him to think of the love that she has for his mom and dad. And then let us gift out feeling that. And I love that she brought up his parents and didn't try to steer him away from his dad. Like she's trying to embrace or help him embrace that he did love his dad, not knowing about the things that he was doing.
Yeah. You think of the love that you have for your mom and dad. That's what she said, which, you know, is it's wise at this point. It's definitely not going to work if you're like, okay, so I want you to be positive, but first I have to tell you something and you're probably not going to like it.
Well, even just like subtly trying to pull him away from his dad.
Yeah.
So finally the moment where Courtney is so happy, laughing and smiling, saying it's magical. Cameron says, just like you. And then we get them kissing and it is a little winter wonderland. So happy. Everything is perfect. Nothing can go wrong.
I wrote smooch in all caps with 4 exclamation points.
It was worth the wait, I think.
I mean, look, for a high school romance to take this long to develop on a CW show is incredible.
It is. Yeah.
And another difference between this and your standard CW show is this romance, I guarantee you, will not now be the center of the entire show.
Right.
Because any other CW superhero show, once there's a romance, that's it. That's the center of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So on the heels of the kiss everyone's waited 2 years for.
Down in the tunnels.
I mean, what a counterpoint. Winter Wonderland, creepy dark tunnels.
And we got Cindy in a gorgeous shirt. Just want to throw that out there.
Can Loved we it. Just say, Cindy is the best dressed on the show.
Oh, for sure.
Always yes. has been. Fashion icon, this woman.
But now she's going to have a little bit of struggles because she pulls some bandages away on her arm and she has green dragon scales.
And look, I got to tell you, if I were a woman, I would dress just like Cindy all the time. I would go shopping for outfits and just copy her all the time to the point where I would be like, I guess I got to figure out how to make my skin green.
Yeah.
Tattoo some scales or something. She's such a fashion icon. Give me the lizard skin. Give it to me.
I could see her like as a Regina George from Mean Girls and people actually getting a tattoo or something of lizard skin to be like her.
Yeah.
But maybe if she was a little bit nicer.
But nice or not, man, that girl can dress.
She can.
So now I guess we're left wondering if she's got scaly skin. Is that Dragon King's skin cell?
Oh, I was taking this as confirmation that it was not Dragon King, that it was her. But I guess there is the outside chance that it could be Dragon King.
So, obviously Cindy's the murderer.
Exactly.
We solved the mystery, everybody. Close the book. That's it. Cindy is the murderer.
I mean, I don't know what we're going to do for the next 9 episodes.
The next 9 episodes, spoiler, are the trial. Just it just turns into Law and Order.
Dun dun.
Episode 5 is all about Cindy getting a defense attorney, and 6 through 13 are just Cindy going through trial, and we're going to find out if she gets away with it or not.
I can't wait to keep watching.
Honestly, if this show did become a courtroom drama, it would still be great.
Maybe next season, that's what they're going to go with.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Let's just think about what the next seasons could be in terms of tone, since it does reinvent itself every season. What other genres have we not tackled yet? Stargirl in space?
Oh, I like that. I like that. Stargirl goes supernatural.
Oh.
She has to fight like ghosts and stuff.
I mean, that was a little bit Eclipso already, though.
Oh, I'm talking about like actual ghosts.
Ooh, heist movie.
Ooh, I like that.
I would love a Stargirl heist season.
Yeah.
Ocean's 11 style.
100%. I'd be down for that.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love, in honor of Luke Wilson, go back to some of his frat boy comedies. Get some of those going for a season.
Oh, yeah. Like an Idiocracy.
I was thinking like Old School. Oh. Maybe once they go to college.
You mean the movie Old School, not like...
Yes, the movie Old School.
Not like just his early career, like Bottle Rocket.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We've done a great job talking about this episode. I think that we might have done the best job anyone's ever done talking about any episode of anything ever. But it's now time to hear from Meg DeLacy. I'm very sorry to say that Sarah was not available when Meg was available, so I had to do this one solo. And I honestly missed having Sarah there to interject, but I made the most of it by having like just kind of a cool, chill conversation with Meg where we talked about Stargirl, but then we also just like chatted about stuff, and I really liked it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to listen to.
So here's that interview right after this break, and hopefully you'll learn something.
Stargirl After Show. Stargirl After Show.
And here we are with the lovely Miss Shiv, Meg DeLacy. Hi, Meg.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining us yet again. Speaking of that, this is your third time on the podcast.
Yeah.
So I feel like we've discussed a lot about Cindy already. And you've done probably so many more interviews. You've probably been asked almost every question that you can possibly be asked.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. They come up with some interesting questions and I'm like, I didn't even think about that actually.
But a lot of times they also just keep asking the same questions.
Right. Yes, they do.
And who do you want to cross over with? What other character would you like to be? Whose suit is the best?
Yeah, 100%. And then you have to kind of figure out like, okay, do I want to change my answer or do I keep this consistent?
If it were me, I would change the answer all the time just to keep everyone guessing.
No one knows. Yeah, you're right. That's a good idea.
Who do you want to cross over with? Law and Order SVU. Dun, dun.
Imagine that.
It'd be great. We are going to talk about season 3 up to now.
Okay.
But for the most part, I think let's just chat. Let's just be smooth and easy, you know?
We're
friends at this point. It's your third time on the podcast. Let's just chill.
Let's chill. I'm down.
Well, let's get the season 3 stuff out of the way. Or we could tease it so people have to listen to the whole thing. All right, we'll just get the season 3 stuff out of the way.
Okay.
The first thing I want to talk about is right at the start, the first time we see Cindy in 301, she's making this almost painful decision to help an old lady cross the street.
Yes.
It was
my
one of my favorite introductions of a character in the season.
I know it's very not like her to do that. It was fun to kind of figure out when the switch happens because she's like, I'm just living my life. And then she sees this woman struggling. She's like, not for me. And then the moment where she hears Courtney's voice in her head, like, hey, we're trying to be better now. And you're part of this team. And to be part of this team means things not only just change within the team itself, but also, you know, as a person when you live, when you're living every day. And it was fun to kind of play with those threads of thoughts walking past this old woman who actually was like truly looked like she was like in real life, like looked like she was struggling to hold this bag, even though it wasn't super heavy. Obviously it's supposed to be, but it was so difficult to shoot that and then be like, no. And then be like, okay. Cause she was like old. She was like frail. I was like, I actually really want to help you like all the way across the street. Don't yell cut.
I mean, it's not fantastic that there was some poor frail woman who had to keep doing this scene out in the hot Georgia sun. But you really do read that whole like sequence of events in your face. It's just chef's kiss.
It is. It's very, it's Shiv's kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Shiv's kiss.
And, you know, Cindy's really walking a line this season. Like, she, clearly, her helping this old lady across the street is indicating, at least to me, that she is definitely trying to be a better person.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But also, she has not opened herself to having any more patience for the unexciting parts of being on a team.
Right.
Or working with others well.
Yeah. I think a lot of that probably comes from just the past season. She's been her own boss. She's also been bossed around a lot by her father before he died. Before I killed him. And so she's not used to being told what to do and has to be kind of put in her place or reminded by Courtney very softly and sweetly that you're part of a team now. We work together. You're not just on your own. She struggles with those two things, just figuring out how to be part of a team, which is honestly what she's always wanted. But then also putting her pride away and being able to just keep her mouth shut if she does have ideas or if she's stepping on people's toes, that it's a communal decision, family type. And also, I mean, her history with Yolanda is a huge thing that kind of keeps her fired up. And I think she kind of likes it, but she also knows that it's hurting her reputation within the team and how likable she could come off as or wants to be come off as just because of their history and how that really hasn't gone away. She hasn't been fully forgiven by Yolanda. And now it kind of seems, you know, you kind of get moments of that from Rick too.
She hasn't really built up the most trustworthy reputation. I mean, let's be fair. Even when she was helping against Eclipso, her big plan was to murder Courtney.
Yes. Yeah. That was, yeah, you kill the host. And then, yeah, Yolanda comes through and she's like, that's my friend. No. And I'm like, you have to. And then she's like, you're supposed to be good now. So that was, yeah, that moment was kind of funny. That moment's actually beautiful. The ending, or that one moment between Shiv and Wildcat season two at the very end when everything was going crazy.
Oh, yeah. But, and they have the team up.
Yeah, the team up.
It was great.
Which was very fun to shoot. So much fun to shoot. I love those late nights. Those late night shoots when everyone's working together. Everyone's there. And everyone's delirious at the same time. And then like has a little coffee and pick me up. It's so fun.
I don't envy those late night shoots. I like
it's more fun with the people because you feel like you're in this, like, especially shooting in Dallas too. Dallas, Georgia, like in the middle of almost nowhere. And everyone's just like held here. Like, it was just kind of fun. It felt like camp.
I really like that. I just get off of work every day at 6 p.m.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I don't have to worry about like fratter days or, you know, that whole, okay, I'm going to finish my day at 6 a.m. And then
right.
The next time I work, I have to be in at 7 a.m. And like yeah. Your whole clock just yeah. Has to get rearranged.
There isn't much of a routine being an actor, but I don't know. I kind of like the spontaneity of it. It keeps you on your toes.
For sure. Now, I did notice this season, Cindy's streaks seem to be getting a little buried under some more of the brown hair and just sort of peeking mm-hmm. out instead of being like right on top. Were there any conversations about that? Is it?
You know, that was just purely a hair decision due to the amount of time that it would take. And then also not gluing the piece to my head, which is essentially bad for your hair and scalp, without using like a ton of hairspray, which isn't very great either. So Niecy, who's our head of hair, she was like, how about we just make them clips? And then to do so, we can just kind of make it a little more natural and bring in the brown a little bit. It was like a gradual thing that happened throughout season two. And then we completely switched over season three. But there was no major conversation. I think that if I'm looking at it as a choice for Cindy to start doing that to her head, probably like trying to hide the fact that she's a little different or like trying to be a little more normal, or just like try new things as a girl in high school. Like, I want to try my hair like this now, you know?
Well, I know that, for example, in season two, when Beth confronts racist Eclipso kid.
That was crazy.
It was, yes. I know that that was the first time we ever see Beth wear black, because that's like a dark moment for her. I know costumes builds in those kinds of things. Right. Also, when Mike is like having the outs with Pat, Mike is suddenly dressed in like completely opposite way of Pat.
Uh-huh.
Things like that. So I thought that maybe the white sort of becoming more and more hidden was like the white is Cindy's evil nature.
Yeah.
And now it's like moving further into the background.
100%. No, yeah, there was definitely moments of that. And when I would see it, either through dailies or just maybe on that day, it was a little more hidden than another scene, which was a different day. going back to what I said about just like hiding it a little bit more and being like, let me just, like, I've been, this has been in my hair ever since I started getting experimented on by my dad, who obviously I have a horrible relationship with. So trying to like leave that in the past and move on and not the streaks being the first thing I see every single time I look in the mirror as a reminder.
I love telling the story in that way, or reinforcing the story, I should say.
Yes.
And I love even more that it became easier for you and didn't hurt your head and scalp.
Yes, yes, yeah.
But season one, Cindy's hair is really awesome to me. Like, I just love it.
No, I feel you. Yeah. And that was, it was definitely way more comic book correct. But after getting used to this hairstyle for 8 months of shooting season one, I started seeing so many people start rocking the look. And I was like, oh my God, this is perfect timing.
I have seen girls walking around with the exact like shiv coloring.
Yes. Yeah.
Like the same in the same place.
It's badass. It's really dope.
And they did a great job too, because I remember the first time we met, you were in costume and I was sitting down and talking to you face to face and couldn't see that it was added on at all.
Oh, of course. No, the way that they did it, even though it was glue and hairspray and stuff, the way that they did it was 100% accurate and also just seamless and looked so great on camera. And then also face to face, you know, up close, you don't see any of it.
I see wig lines on TV and movies all the time. Like I can spot it. Even if you can't see the actual line, sometimes like it's just a little smoother there.
Yeah, you know, yeah. But it looks kind of off.
To not be able to tell in person, that's just a fantastic job.
100%. It was. They did a great job.
You like how I started talking about your hair in like a deep, meaningful way and then just went like super shallow with it?
No, I like that you caught that, and that's, and the deeper meaning behind it was way more on your tongue than it was just like, oh, was that like a mistake?
No, and also I noticed that the way her hair is shaped, it reminded me of like a cobra with its hood out.
Oh, the new way.
Yeah.
Yes.
The new way.
I love that. I love that you're finding meanings to all this, because I honestly think that the reason why it was just like maybe a different person was doing my hair that day.
Possibly.
To be honest. Yeah.
But, you know, they could be thinking all this behind the scenes and not like really communicating it with you. Just going like, oh, how's this?
That's very true. That's very true. I would hope so. I would hope so. I know that Niecy used to play with how relaxed my curls were versus some days it wasn't. It was a little curlier. Just per my mood, as a character, you know, like a little more like it's been a long day, everything's dropped, or like, I'm feeling a little more flirty today, or I'm feeling like, oh, you know, I'm just kind of calm. And that would start showing in the hairstyles.
While your hair is maybe leaning away from the Dragon King-ness of it all by hiding the white a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The big reveal in this episode is that the rest of Cindy's body is going in a different direction.
Yes.
Halfway through the episode, we get a Dragon King blink, which is my favorite thing. And then at the end of the episode, it's of course revealed that she's going full on lizard girl.
Full on reptile. Right. Yes. Kind of crazy. Very panic mode in her head of just trying to figure out what is happening to her and when it started, how it started. Was it always planned? You know, did her dad do this to her? Was she born this way? You know, all of those things are going through her head at this moment in this episode. And she's freaking out. I mean, if anyone that I know that's dealing with body stuff or just internal things that are coming out physically, and you have no idea what they are. And you can't look it up online and be like, oh, are other people also turning into reptiles? Like, obviously, it's something a little more supernatural, a little more extraordinary. And messing with those circumstances while preparing for this episode and these scenes and this possible transformation was really fun, but also kind of scary. I mean, I can imagine if you start seeing reptile skin on your arm, you can only imagine what it's doing to you internally, you know? Just the stress, or just also like maybe like a different type of heart rate, you know? Reptiles like run cold. So just feeling like just dark inside instead of warm and happy. And all she's dealing with all of this change while she's actually trying to mentally and just in her heart change for the team, for being a better person. So it's kind of like how do I explain this? I'm making a circular motion right now, audience, where it's like, it's kind of like unfolding, but also folding on itself.
And you know, all of that would be scary enough if it were just like, oh my God, this is like lizard skin. What is that about? But she's seen the end result in her dad.
She's very used to seeing reptiles. She's just not reptilian skin. She's just not used to having it on her body and feeling it physically herself.
But like, she also can see like where it's going. And if it's not stopped,
her whole body will be reptile. And she doesn't want that. She doesn't want that.
No. Why would she?
No, she doesn't want to wear a hood like her dad all the time. She was like, she wanted to be like the popular pretty girl of the whole school, and she'll just be a horror story.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I have been upset about all through season two and so far through season three is the fact that when Cindy returns to Blue Valley, we never see her and Jenny meet back up again. Jenny, her sidekick.
Yeah.
Jakeem's sister.
Right. Yes.
I really wanted to explore Jenny's dynamic in a post Cindy Blue Valley High. Did she become the alpha girl, or did she like become the beta to a different alpha girl? And then what does either of those happen? How are either of those affected when Cindy comes back? But sadly, there were too many bigger things going on. We didn't get to explore.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, I know we didn't. I mean, in my head, I would probably say that Jenny goes on to being still remaining popular and maybe even, you know, team captain of the cheerleading squad and all of that. But I think that Cindy honestly is like, well, been there, done that. I run the show in that situation for a while. I left school for a whole year and was like done with it. So she kind of let it go. She's like, I have other things to deal with instead of just like trying to run this school. She doesn't have kids to spy on anymore, like her dad wanted her to. And so I think she's just kind of graduated from that. She's like, I'm a little better than this. I'm a little better than this. So I'll let Jenny have that. Maybe they had a conversation about it, or maybe it was just like, I'll see you in school. Cool. She just is, her brain is just, her focus is elsewhere.
I could just see like Jenny having her own squad and then running into Cindy in the hall and being like, oh, Cindy, I'm the queen now, blah, blah, blah. And Cindy just doesn't care.
Yeah.
No, leaving her like, feeling all dejected and dumb.
Yeah. Just kind of like, good for you. Like, go ahead, do it. Like, I like how many times can I do flips in the air? Like, I don't know.
I kind of wish that we were having this interview like an episode or two later, just because
I know we have a lot. There's a lot that's going to happen.
Yeah, there's some fun stuff coming up, and we'll just leave that as a tease, I guess.
Yeah, there's huge transformations, but also just conflict and confrontation that happens within the next few episodes that surround Cindy and kind of make her a little angry because all she's trying to do is be good and she's not being recognized for her trying. So I don't know. I think it's going to blow up in her face.
So I don't know what else we can really talk about for season three. There's great stuff coming up. People are going to have to stay tuned to check that out. But Meg, I haven't seen you since I think that time I dropped you off at the airport to go visit the man that would soon after become your fiance.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Oh my gosh, you're right. You like literally dropped me off to go do that.
Yeah. So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I'm very excited for you.
Thank you. I know, me too. Living in New York too is, I made the move. I still have my house in LA, but New York's been treating me well. And I love living in it, like trying out a new city in a city like New York. It's just never ending. It's been very fun.
Is the rent everything they say it is?
Yes. Yeah. Plus some. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know
how
people,
it's kind of crazy.
I don't know how people live in LA or in New York. I mean,
both,
but also LA.
Both.
Yeah.
Also LA too. I mean, yeah, that's why I tried not to rent so much when I was in LA and just decided to like go all in. But yeah, no, rent here is insane. I don't know how people do it either. I mean, I'm obviously living with someone, so there's some help, but yeah.
And you
living
know, you're
a
also,
single life.
You're also an actress, so you guys typically get paid well. You're not you're not a barista trying to make it in a New York City apartment. That would be
which like is filled, like New York is filled with that, and so that's why it's just you work to play.
Yeah, I've been watching Broad City with my wife, and I don't know how those girls.
Broad City is one of the best New York based shows I think I've ever seen, and they do it perfectly well, like just explaining what it's like to be a single girl or a single guy in New York, and just how much fun you can still actually have, like just because you're not making a ton of money and you're spending it all on rent. You find people, the people here are honestly why you moved. Just, they're just a little more wild and down to clown.
So what other projects have you been working on since Stargirl wrapped?
I've been recurring on The Rookie for a few seasons. So I knocked out a couple episodes of that and did some voiceover work. But other than that, like, honestly, I can't, the whole cast really can't audition for much TV, which is where everything kind of seems to be. It's few and far in between when it comes to indies that that my reps think I should be auditioning for. Which would be the only thing I could, movie-wise. I mean, indies or features, but depending on the shooting schedule, just because of our contract, it's been difficult to do that and plan and schedule that around the potential season four, if we do get that or not.
Have you been working on music?
Yes, yes. My other half of my life, I've been making music. I've been in the studio. I found a great music community out here and a new producer. So I have just new hands on all the songs coming out. I plan on releasing a single in about 3 weeks and then another single a month after following, just to kind of cap on Stargirl 2 and have a few things coming out at a time. So it's been really wonderful. And I feel very inspired and motivated out here. It's kind of hard not to, because
nice.
Everyone's just moving. Yeah.
I'm glad. I always I have a very old man taste in music.
Okay.
Older man than even me. Most of the music I listen to is from before I was born. But I've liked everything of yours that I have heard. It's very fun.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So I look forward to more.
Oh, I appreciate that. I know. I'm excited. I'm excited for people to hear some new stuff. It's a different approach, slightly, music wise.
So, as you know, we recently had Dragon Con here in Atlanta, and
I heard it was very fun.
I don't know how they overlooked getting the daughter of Dragon King at Dragon Con, but I will say that you were missed.
Oh, thank you. I know. There was a little bit of talks about me going. Unfortunately, at that time, I was taking this this really big traditional trip that my parents usually go on. I've been going on since I was like one. And it's Lake Powell. It's right in between Arizona and Utah. One of my, probably the, one of my most favorite place in the world. And so I kind of, and also Brody, my fiance, he was going to come with us for the first time, which was like a huge deal, because when you have a significant other with you on that trip, it kind of is like a, I don't know, it's a moment for the whole family to be like, this is real. So it was kind of, it was important for us to do that. So, unfortunately it landed on the same weekend. But I wish that it didn't and I was able to go. It would have been fun. Well, but I'm glad that, you know, we had people representing. We had Jakeem there.
He was not
Alcoya.
He was not one of the guests. He came up to visit Trey, and then he just they were like, "Do you want to be on the panels too?" And he's like, "Yeah, all right." And then he sat at Trey's booth and signed autographs and did selfies and the whole thing.
That's so cute. I love that.
Unfortunately, Breck had to cancel at the last minute because this VC Andrews movie is eating all her time, and she was heartbroken about it. But I got to spend a whole lot of time with Ange and Yvette and Trey and Alcoye, who I had not previously met.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's such a sweetheart, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll say right here on the podcast that Trey and Al's real life relationship is even closer than Mike and Jakeem's.
Absolutely. I know. They play off of each other very well. Also, they're so obsessed with their fashion game right now, and I think it's awesome.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's very fun.
It's very fun.
But yeah, I got to spend more time with all those guys than I had ever done before. Some late nights, some dancing.
Nice.
It was real good times. And at one point, we were in a crowd of literally thousands of people. The entire floor of the Marriott turns into just a giant dance party at some point in the night.
Uh-huh.
And we're there and all that. And Yvette looks over and sees her stunt double, Kira.
Oh, my God, Kira. That's amazing. She did mention that she ran into her.
How random to just run into a version of yourself.
That's so crazy. Yeah, no, I know. And Kira killed it. She makes Wildcat look like such a badass. Our whole stunt team is amazing.
I mean, you can't mention any of them without putting that out there because...
Absolutely.
God, every fight scene on this show is amazing.
It's amazing. Lauren Kim, who plays my stunt double, she's... such a powerhouse, and she's so good at what she does, and I'm so happy because I think I had a different stunt double season two, and then Lauren came back season three. And
oh yeah, because on season two she was busy with like these other small projects, like The Mandalorian, and
yeah, and
all these Marvel things and stuff.
Yeah, the Marvel stuff. Yeah, small things.
Yeah,
small little things.
Little side passion projects. You know,
right, of course.
Nothing as cool as Stargirl, but.
No, she was so excited to be back. She was like, oh my God, yay. It was a whole reunited moment.
Yeah, I love the stunt team. But Dragon Con was genuinely a lot of fun. I just wish I shouldn't say this, but like of everyone that wasn't there, I was like, Meg is the one that should be here.
I know. It's named after me.
I mean, not just for that. Like, I felt like you would have brought up the fun level also.
Oh, thank you, Sean. I appreciate that. I know. I wish I was too. Maybe, hopefully next year. Maybe. Who knows? We'll see.
I mean, you should.
I went to a con a few months ago and
you went to that one in the UK with Breck, right?
Yes, yeah. And very fun, a lot of work, and so, so lovely meeting everyone that follows the show and follows all the other shows that had been going or are not going anymore. Like, just the dedication and the honor. It was really cool.
Well, in the future, as you're considering attendance at various cons, I will tell you that Dragon Con is absolutely unlike any other convention.
I love that. Well, next year I'm going to get my agent on it and I'll be there.
It's not the biggest convention because like there's San Diego Comic-Con and New York Comic-Con, but those are like basically corporate run marketing events.
Yeah.
Dragon Con is a fan run event.
That's cool.
The entire organization is and has always been just fans. And they set up this huge thing and it's just like it's a party that does not end for 5 days.
That's amazing. That's so cool that a community can get together like that every year and celebrate the things that they love.
The Saturday night of the convention, I left at 4:30 in the morning and there were still people like out and mingling. When I left.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
That's so wild.
Just never, ever ends. It's fantastic. It's my favorite 5 days of the year. So definitely get your agent on it. So what else is going on, dude? Like, you're going to get married soonish. You're living in New York. You're making music.
Living in New York, making music.
You're coming to Dragon Con next year.
100%. Honestly, it's just like I'm really just settling into New York and letting a new city kind of hit me. I've never lived anywhere else besides Atlanta, but Atlanta, you kind of feel like you're in a bubble in a way just because you have your castmates and you have your job and a routine in some sort of way.
And you're in a bubble actually, because you're like in this cool place that's just surrounded by a sea of the opposite of what Atlanta is, you know,
exactly.
like your Austins or your Dallases.
Right. Exactly. And, which is really cool to experience too. Cause that was the first time when I moved to Atlanta, it was the first time I ever lived by myself. Felt very fortunate and grateful for that. But moving and picking up my life and coming to New York for a personal reason, and understanding how the entertainment business works here, understanding the different types of people you meet, understanding like all the different opportunities and things to do and music scenes and just the pace in general is something that's actually super huge and drastic. It was a major decision that I made very easily. And then I came here and I was like, oh, damn, this is huge. And really just enjoying that and being as present as I can every day. That's what I've been doing.
Nice. You know, this whole interview was just a cheap ploy to like have an opportunity to catch up.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And now it's recorded for everyone to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why anyone would not find any of this absolutely captivating.
I think everyone would love to know about our lives and how New York is a place that everyone should eventually go to. And if you can live there, there's a saying, it's like live in LA until you're too soft and live in New York until you're too hard.
Maybe get out of New York before you like reach that point where everywhere you go, everything is just a comparison to New York. You know, those people.
Yeah. In New York, you're talking about in New York.
I mean, people that lived in New York and now are elsewhere that just use New York as their like reference point for everything.
Oh, yes.
100%. Oh, in New York, we do it
like,
differently.
Oh, it's better. Yeah. Like, oh, no, the pizza is better.
Oh,
I know. I feel you. Yeah. I totally feel you.
You can't get a manicure like you can in New York.
Right. Yeah. No. Well, I will never become that annoying New Yorker. Definitely.
I was watching something recently, just some show, and some guy was like, oh, I'm a 100% a New Yorker, but, you know, I had to move out here because blah, blah, blah. And they were like, how long did you live in New York? It's like 7 months.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, that is the truest joke I've ever seen on a TV show.
That's hilarious. I mean, Brody, my fiance, has lived here for 20 years. And I think, and he still says, he's like, I still don't know pockets of New York the way I should, even though I've been here for such a long time. And it's that type of place too. And you can, and you need to remind yourself to look at it that way. You don't know everything. Like, it's like an onion and it just peels and peels away. Yeah, I don't know when I'll ever decide to call myself a true New Yorker. I feel like it'll be never ending.
I feel like New York is like its own country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could spend as much time acclimating to the New York lifestyle as you could acclimating to living in Lisbon.
100%.
Like a whole other nation.
A whole other place. 100%. I completely agree with you.
There are whole pockets of New York where people, like, nobody speaks English or ever has.
Oh, I know. Like, I know, especially in Brooklyn, where I'm in Brooklyn, and obviously we talked about the food a little bit, but because of those pockets of just pure culture and speaking another language and all of that, they hold on to their traditions and their food, and everything is just very authentic, which is a cool thing to experience. And it's all like 20 minutes away.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to go to New York to experience other cultures authentically than to travel all the way across, like, the globe.
20 hours away. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I think that I've run out of small talk.
That's okay. That's okay. It was nice to see you just in general too. See your face. I know you guys can't see our faces, but I'm looking at Sean right now. And he's just beaming, even though he's getting over it. Just a slight cold, but you can't even tell.
I hope not.
That's, you can't at all.
That's why...
I just outed you. I just kind of outed you, but it's okay because you don't sound sick at all.
No, it's fine. We didn't have an interview on the last episode for the first time since the first two episodes of the podcast ever.
Oh my gosh, because of ill.
Yeah, because scheduling conflicts, and by the time I could schedule something, I was just too stuffed up and my voice was all, you know, I guess.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
No, but no, you look golden now. So,
fun fact,
been out of it.
My other podcast, Table Reads, the first two episodes, I very clearly have a cold. And I go back and I listen to it. And while I find those episodes hilarious and I really actually enjoy them, I'm also thinking, like, this is your first episode. Why didn't you just wait, Sean?
Ah!
Like, you didn't have a scheduling deadline to meet. What? Why were you like, I'm sick, I'll do it anyway? It sounds awful.
You were just excited. You were like, I have this new baby project that I want to get it out. You couldn't help yourself.
Just... So it's a little cringe to listen to for me for that reason. I hate the idea that someone's like, I'm going to try this at episode one. It's like, oh, is this what this guy always sounds like? Hard pass.
I know, I was going to say, I was like, maybe, like, it would have been funny because then, like, episode three, when you're better, they're like, wait, is this the same guy?
And it was one recording session. We just split it into two episodes because we were like, oh my God, it took a lot longer to read this 16-page script than we thought.
Yeah, right. That's so cool.
We had to spend so much time making fun of it. You know, it's hard to get through. I wrote it, so it's fair.
I think your other podcast is such a great just theme and storyline to it. It's really entertaining.
I really very much enjoy it because, you know, we don't read stuff that's like aspirational. It's not like an unproduced screenplay that some guy wrote in his hopes to make it. You know, it's his passion project or anything like that. It's stuff the studios hired someone to write.
Right, right.
And that's why they're bad. We did... a Bill and Ted reboot.
Uh-huh.
And I actually reached out to the screenwriter to find out if they wrote it on spec or if they were hired by the studio. And they said they were hired by the studio. If they had not said that, I would not have done the screenplay, even though they were an established screenwriter.
Oh, I see. You know, that's cool that, like, you reach out to these people and they, like,
I usually don't have to. That was the only instance where I had to. And sometimes, because the whole premise is that the scripts are bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But on occasion, a script is good. We've had two good scripts where we were just like, oh my God, this is fun and great. I don't know why.
Is it a blind read? Is it a blind read?
We go in.
Oh, I love that.
Completely cold. The only like non-studio hired scripts that we've read are ones that we have written.
Gotcha.
Which was supposed to be the premise for the whole damn podcast.
Right.
Because I had a whole drawer full of stuff I've written since I was 15. And I was like, we have to just read this and make a podcast out of it. And that drawer went faster than I anticipated. Our original intro said, it's me and my friend Trevor were the original hosts. And the intro says, we've written so much Drek together and apart that it could keep this show running forever. And that very quickly proved not to be the case.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny. Who else have you interviewed so far on this podcast for this season?
For this season, just Eric. Eric Goines, the gambler, and Christina Basket.
Oh, cool. Christina, nice.
Finally got someone from Stunts. I've wanted to for a very long time. And finally made it happen. That's it so far. But, you know, obviously I'm going to have all the JSA kids on.
Mm-hmm.
We've decided here's something for you guys to look forward to. We're going to have Trey and Al on together.
Oh, perfect. As a pair. That's so perfect.
At the same time.
That's brilliant.
Hopefully I can do that at one of the points when Al's up here visiting so we can have him in studio, because two people on Zoom is going to be harder. And I mean, those two in a room together.
Oh my God, you guys could talk forever.
I barely need to do anything. Except occasionally explain, sorry guys, they're not laughing at anything. They're just having a psychic laughter moment.
Yeah, yeah, I know. They're so good at that.
But yeah, so we have a lot more of the season coming up. We're only four episodes in. Which leaves us nine more episodes.
Nine more.
Nine weeks till the end of the season. Man,
rolling out.
That actually doesn't seem like that much.
It doesn't seem like a lot. I know. I've only done 13, which I think keeps the integrity of the show and gives Jeff more just room to be precise in storyline instead of like spread out and like kind of like redundant in a way.
You know, I've said it on the podcast before, but I don't think that any story needs 22 episodes to tell.
Yeah. I agree.
And when you watch a 22 episode season of a TV show, it doesn't feel like you're watching a season long story. It feels like you're just watching a whole bunch of disjointed things that are held together by a thread.
Right.
And that's not superhero shows. That's all shows.
I agree. This whole limited series thing, I'm a big fan of.
Yeah. I mean, I think 13 episodes is sort of the upper limit of being able to tell a cohesive one story, which is what Stargirl does well. Season 100%. One is a story with its own theme. Season 2 is a story with its own theme. Season 3 is a story with its own theme. It's
brilliant.
It's just so good. Oh, hey, one other weird thing to tell you. You know, I flew to London.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, Hunter was on my flight.
What?
Yeah. I ran into him and his mom at the gate.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Right?
I know. Yeah, he did go to London. And then I had another girlfriend who was also in London at the same time. So it sounds like all three of y'all were there. That's crazy.
But even more, my wife and I went to the Harry Potter studio tour out at Leavesden.
And so did he.
And no, but Alex Garfin from Superman and Lois was just like standing next to me.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah. So I'm like running into CW actors all over the place.
Small world. Hunter went to the Harry Potter thing too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
he did. What if he was there at the same time also? That would be so weird.
That's why I was saying, I was like, I mean, I know it's probably huge, but like, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you guys just missed each other.
Yeah. I did go out to the country for the first week I was out there, though.
Gotcha.
So we were only in London at the same time for like 3 days.
Okay.
But
that's cool. Yeah. London was fun when I went and everything, too.
And
I was out in the country, but and then went in.
And Alex Garfin and I talked a bit about, you know, Jeff, because Jeff is executive producer on his show as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, I mentioned that I work on Stargirl. I'm not just going to be like, hey, I'm some 40 something year old guy who likes the show you're on. he was like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. Like, we on Superman and Lois, like, definitely borrow a lot from that show.
Yeah.
We shoot the same way, and like the season lengths and the way the stories are told. Like, I think that, I think that Superman and Lois took a lot of its cues from Stargirl. And I don't know if you watch it, but like, it's,
you can see it,
just about as good as Stargirl.
Awesome. Amazing. I haven't. It's on my list. It's been on my list for a minute.
It's a really good show. I don't know if you're actually like into superhero content other than what you're on, and you don't have to out yourself one way or the other. But I very much enjoy that show, and it's the best Superman since Christopher Reeve.
Amazing. No, I've seen clips and everything of Superman and Lois, and it looks beautiful, and it looks like it's executed exactly the way everyone wanted it to be.
Yeah, I could give a TED talk on like the through line of like the evolution of superhero television.
Uh-huh.
And I think that Stargirl sort of hit a nexus of comic book television content.
Yeah.
And then created a new paradigm a bit.
Right. Yeah. We're leading a little bit, which is really cool.
But, you know, also standing on the shoulders of others who have
all
paved the way.
Absolutely.
And there's a very
always
clear lineation
line.
But I won't subject you to my TED talk right now.
One day though. One day you should.
Next time you're in Atlanta, if you don't text me and meet up with me for lunch, I'm going to be very offended.
You're the first person. You're the first person I'm texting.
I mean, I don't need that level of honor, but whatever. As long as I hear from you.
You took me to the airport to go get engaged. That's like a crazy thing.
Your car was parked in front of my house for like a week.
I know. That was so funny. By the way, I have my car here. I don't even know why I have my car here, but I have it here. I don't use it and I miss it. Now that you just brought up my car, I'm like, ooh. It's just sitting in a garage around the corner.
I mean, at least you have a garage. It's so much better than like trying to find a parking spot in New York City.
100%. Yeah. But I need to use it more. It's nice having my car here just in case anything, you know, but definitely when we go to LA.
Yeah. I mean, if you need to go somewhere outside New York, you know, if you want to drive to Philly or somewhere in Jersey or something, you definitely want a car.
100%. You know, yeah.
Take a train to those places or whatever. Mm-mm.
Yeah, no, you definitely want a car. And we have dogs too, so bring them to the beach and stuff will be fun.
Yeah, you just don't need the car for in the city stuff.
Yes, 100%. You definitely need a car though in LA, and we do go visit LA a lot, and it's kind of a pain to not have a car and just Uber everywhere.
Oh, so now you don't have a car in LA.
Exactly, yes. That's my thing.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
London is very easy without a car.
Oh, I love public transportation in London. It's so nice. And a lot of it's above ground too, which is really pretty. And the trains are really just well kept.
Yeah. And like the announcements are all in such a great accent.
100%. I took the train to the airport when I left. It was the easiest ride ever.
That we did not do. I didn't want to take suitcases on the train, you know?
Yeah, I had one little one, so it was pretty easy, but
Oh, my wife's suitcase, is a beast.
It's huge.
It's always like right under the weight limit.
Oh, really? That's usually what how I am too. If I do check in a bag, but just traveling a bunch, I'm just like, I'm going to get really good at just having a small carry on. And for some reason, it's worked every single time. I'm usually the one that overpacks all the time. And I don't know if this suitcase just is like a magical suitcase where I can just fit everything in it, or I'm just getting really good at minimalizing my life.
You know what? This is one of my favorite interviews ever. I love just chatting.
Me too.
Without having
Me
to like
too, Sean.
Tie everything into the show. You know.
Yeah, I enjoy it too. Me too.
We are more than the shows that we work on.
100%. We can never forget that.
Well, thank you for coming back on this podcast. And I am crossing my fingers for good news on season 4.
Me too.
And, you know, they do shoot so many things here in Atlanta. So while you wait for the news, you know, just throw out some auditions, you know?
Yeah.
Throw some self tapes at some Atlanta shows and get your ass down here.
I will. I will. I definitely will. It was nice talking to you too, Sean. Thank you for having me.
I love having you on, Meg. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. Stargirl
After Show. Sarah, what did you think? Was I too relaxed?
I thought that was great. Yeah, learned a lot about New York.
It was just really nice to talk to Meg, and I felt like she's been on this show enough that we could just chill.
Yeah.
Meg was one of the first friends I made on the show. And she's just really easy to talk to. So it was a good time for me.
Yeah, I think I've said on the show probably a couple of times that I sometimes have issues with actors and actresses when they are so good at playing a bad guy that I just do not like that actor in anything else. And she was close to that in season 1 for me. But I definitely have warmed up as Cindy has started changing. And I'm really enjoying hearing all about Meg DeLacy.
Yeah, I think that... the journey that Cindy's going on is just really amazing. And it's giving Meg the opportunity to really spread her wings.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't watched The Fosters, but I think I'm going to have to go back and watch it because she apparently has quite a journey on that show as well.
Okay. Yeah.
With Joy Osmonsky as her doctor.
Oh yeah. A bunch of the Stargirl cast was on the Fosters.
Yeah. Yvette was on it as well.
Yeah.
That's it for... this episode. I really hope you enjoyed the interview with Meg. I know it's not the exact kind of interview we typically do, but you know, I haven't seen a bunch of these guys in a while. So like, I'm just going to take the opportunity to talk to them if I get the chance, you know?
Yeah, it's good to catch up.
Sarah, where can people find your other stuff on the internet?
So if you go to fandomlimb.com, you can find a whole bunch of podcasts on there, a couple of which I am on, a couple of which Sean is on. So definitely go check them out there. Also go to merch.stargirlaftershow.com because we got some really awesome stuff up there too.
Oh yeah. I'm adding a whole bunch of new merch in the coming days, and I might even switch who manufactures it because I think I found another option with more options or more different stuff.
Okay.
And better quality.
Oh, it's nice.
The same link will work though. Merch.stargirlaftershow.com will take you there. Go subscribe or follow us in the podcast app of your choice. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, go leave a review, please, with some typey words in there. You know, not just don't just click a star or 5 of them. Say something. Tell us what you think. Let our other listeners know why you listen to this show, because then other people will go, oh, that sounds like a good reason to listen to the show, and they'll listen to it. Nobody cares how many stars a thing has. They want to know what you think, and so do I. Sarah, not so much. She doesn't really
care. I absolutely want to know what you think.
So that's it for us. We're going to see you next week as we discuss episode 305, The Thief, which is going to be a fun time, I can guarantee, because I can see into the future. So we'll see you in the future. And until then, have a super great day.
Stargirl After Show is a production of Fandom Limb Media.